ratification of the Paris climate deal. It paves the way for the landmark pact to come into force globally. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
It is Tuesday, October 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry criticizes Russia for supporting the Syrian government. The two major party candidates for the U.S. vice presidency will debate tonight in Virginia. And singer Usher returns with a new single. It's all ahead. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry criticized Russia for what he called its irresponsible and profoundly ill-advised decision to support Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. He also said efforts to end the Syrian war must continue despite the suspension of U.S.-Russian talks on a ceasefire. Kerry spoke Tuesday in Brussels.
We are not giving up on the Syrian people. We are not abandoning the pursuit of peace. We are not going to leave the multilateral field. We are going to continue to try to find a way forward in order to end this war. And we will do everything possible through the International Syria Support Group, through the United Nations, or even through smaller multilateral meetings in order to try to find a way forward. We remain committed to a peaceful, stable, whole, united, non-sectarian Syria.
Monday, the United States and Russia suspended talks to implement a ceasefire in Syria after the United States accused Moscow of not honoring its commitment to stop fighting and ensure relief aid reached besieged neighborhoods. Russia said it regrets the U.S. decision. The U.S. will continue using a channel of communications with Moscow to deconflict counterterrorism operations in Syria. Regional analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this is the latest setback in international efforts to bring the 5.5-year conflict to an end, and that represents what he called an incredible tragedy for the Syrian people.
Russian air assaults have been among the most devastating in this long-running conflict in terms of civilian casualties. The rebel groups, which are dominated by, though not exclusively, hardline Islamists, have also been engaged in ceasefire violations, which have also resulted in civilian casualties, albeit at not as high a level. And other breakdowns, including the U.S. bombing of the Syrian base just hours after the ceasefire went into effect. I mean, these have all ended up building enormous amount of distrust on all sides, and it seems that there is no real hope for a diplomatic solution in the foreseeable future.
Stephen, how likely, with the end of these talks, could the U.S. consider military options to help the rebels in Aleppo, such as providing more sophisticated arms, logistical support, even training?
It's a very difficult situation in that what we found in Aleppo in particular is that the hardline Islamist groups that the United States considers to be a terrorist are the most powerful force. And if there was some way logistically of delivering arms to the more moderate rebels in the mix, there's no guarantee that the hardline Islamists won't get a hold of them. Indeed, we found that most U.S. arms that have been shipped to support moderate elements within the Syrian opposition have ended up in the hands of ISIS, al-Nusra, or other extremist groups. It's very difficult for the United States to be able to fund the groups we do feel are more responsible and more reflective of the Syrian majority when you have this problem of not having a unified force. You know, the military options for the United States and other allies of those challenging both the regime and the Islamic extremists are very slim.
Stephen Zuna said with Russia's decision to end cooperation with the U.S. on the disposal of weapons-grade plutonium coming the same day, he views the state of U.S.-Russian relations at the lowest since the end of the Cold War in the early 1990s. Diplomats at the U.N. are attempting to come up with a draft Security Council resolution that would urge both Moscow and Washington to ensure an immediate ceasefire in Aleppo. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, we have a big debate tonight.
I've heard.
Yes, in Farmville, Virginia, the vice presidential debate, the two candidates, the running mates of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton will face off. I imagine there's not going to be as many exciting moments as there were in the first presidential debate, and social media is agreeing with that. They're expecting it to be maybe a little more boring, a little more
subdued.
Subdued is a nice way to put it. And to that end, you know, there's expected to be a lot less viewership, and we've even seen viral videos on social media where people are unable to identify Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's running mate, and Mike Pence, Donald Trump's running mate. So maybe not as much interest as there was in the first presidential debate, but if there's anything that comes out of that debate that's trending, we will have that for you tomorrow. Otherwise, trending today, hashtag Hurricane Matthew, as that Category 4 hurricane slammed into Haiti earlier today. We're seeing some of the first images of the devastation of the flooding that's going on there, and already social media is trying to mobilize, trying to get together to conduct fundraising, to collect supplies, knowing that they're going to be badly needed down there. Also, a lot of concern about where the storm's going to go as regard to the United States, setting its course right now for the U.S. state of Florida, for the state of North Carolina. So a lot of concern about that in the coming days here in the U.S. And then finally, hashtag World Animal Day. We talk about these hashtags, you know, World Animal Day, Dog Day, what have you,
and
it's
cat
usually
day, yeah.
Cat Day. It's usually a chance for people to post pictures of their pets. But World Animal Day, people are certainly doing that as well. But there are a lot of organizations are using this to highlight animals around the world that are endangered, that are facing different kinds of population reduction, whether it's because of food sources or climate change or pollution, those kind of things. So people are using that for a good message today, and also to show off the cute animals.
Oh, well, absolutely. It's always fun.
That always
to look
brings
at
people into the social media, and then they have the message on top of that.
So. That, yes. Okay. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. Islamic State plans widespread destruction in Mosul as conditions worsen residents. U.S. views on climate change have fall, or they go along partisan lines. A secure phone app is subpoenaed by the government. And Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton regains a polling edge over Republican candidate Donald Trump. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A star called KIC 846-2852 is still getting a lot of attention a year after scientists studying data from NASA's Kepler mission noticed the star's unusual light fluctuations. Theories about what caused the star's weird dimming patterns vary from it being surrounded by planetary material or by a flock of comets to the idea that there is a nearby megastructure built by an advanced race of aliens. A new study has found that along with its strange pattern of light fluctuations, the star's overall brightness has also faded slowly and steadily during the 4 years of Kepler observation. The study's two authors found that the star had dimmed by nearly 1% over the first 3 years of the 4 years, and then by 2% over the following 6 months of study. The star's brightness remained at that level for the final 6 months of the mission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the forecast for Hurricane Matthew. Well, as we heard, the two U.S. vice presidential candidates, Democrat Tim Kaine and Republican Mike Pence, will be meeting in their only televised debate tonight in Farmville, Virginia. This comes a week after the first of three presidential debates between Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump. I spoke with VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson, who is in Farmville, and asked her about the buzz surrounding tonight's face-off.
Absolutely. So the buzz here is that we have these two vice presidential candidates who, by self-admission, are, quote, boring personalities, very low-key people, and yet they're on tickets with these very strong personalities, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. So what will be interesting to see tonight is how they defend the top of the ticket. And, of course, we've had a very interesting week in terms of those issues, particularly with Donald Trump's tax returns. I expect that Mike Pence will have to do a bit of defending right off the bat on that issue.
Yeah, that certainly stirred quite a bit of controversy this week. Well, speaking of Mr. Pence, I think he's been described, or he might describe himself, as being sort of a vanilla kind of a candidate. And I think in a way, maybe Mr. Kaine, is similar. As you said, these two guys are not as controversial as the top of the tickets.
That's very true. Tim Kaine has described himself as, quote, boring. And Mike Pence describes himself as Christian, conservative, and Republican in that order. So it'll be interesting to see if they really go after each other, particularly on some of the social issues that really didn't come up in the first presidential debate, you know, discussions about abortion and, you know, value and culture in this country that Hillary and Donald Trump really didn't get into the last time around. I expect we might see some of that this time.
You know, but looking at it, how significant are the vice presidential debates? Because usually most voters, I think, tend to look at who's on the top of the ticket.
That's very right, and that's particularly true in this presidential election year when you have two such strong polar opposite personalities. Voters are really going to be looking at Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I don't think that what will happen tonight will move any voter, particularly in any swing state, one way or the other, but it could advance the discussion forward for the next week until the next presidential debate in St. Louis this next Sunday.
Now, I know you've had a chance to talk to some of the residents in Farmville about the presidential election. What have they had to say to you about it?
Well, we're in a very interesting part of Virginia, which is the southwestern, more rural part of Virginia, where it tends to be Donald Trump territory. People here are very concerned about jobs. They're thinking about the economy. And that message from the Trump-Pence campaign of make America great again and bring those jobs back really resonates here. This is definitely Donald Trump territory. It was also interesting, I have been going back and forth in Farmville this past week and have noticed all of the Donald Trump signs, but overnight some Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine signs seem to have popped up along the road. So that was an interesting development here on the way to the debate today.
That's VOA's Catherine Gibson, who is in Farmville, Virginia. Hurricane Matthew made landfall in western Haiti Tuesday morning after more than a day of heavy rain from the powerful storm's outer bands caused street flooding and sent many people to shelters. Winds of 230 kilometers an hour struck the coast early in the day. It's the first Category 4 hurricane to hit Haiti since 1964. Two deaths were reported in Haiti Monday morning, with more expected as winds, rain, and floods continue to ravage the impoverished country. At least four deaths have been reported in the neighboring Dominican Republic. Dennis Felkin is a spokesperson for the National Hurricane Center in Miami, Florida.
Well, right now it's moving to the north at about 10 miles per hour, just north of the Haitian Peninsula and just to the south of the southeastern tip of Cuba. It's expected to turn to the north-northwest and then northwest during the next 24 to 36 hours, which would place the hurricane right through the Bahamian chain from southeast Bahamas through central and then eventually northwest Bahamas. And hurricane warnings are in all those locations I just mentioned. A hurricane watch has been issued now for a portion of the Florida coastline from Deerfield Beach in South Florida northward to the Volusia-Brevard County line. And a tropical storm watch is out now from the Middle Keys, the old 7-mile bridge northward to just south of Deerfield Beach, and that includes Lake Okeechobee. So for the Tropical Storm Watch, it does include metropolitan Miami-Dade and Broward counties.
And what about, you know, maybe perhaps looking ahead a few days, the Carolinas, because I believe they're quite frightened about the hurricane hitting there as well.
Well, there are no watches or warnings out anywhere or else along the southeastern United States. The only watches that are up right now are along the Florida coastline. That said, looking down the road later on in the week, additional watches may be required northward. That could include portions of Georgia and both South and North Carolina. There's still a good deal of uncertainty in the track on that, but right now the folks there in the Carolinas and Georgia have a couple of days to watch this very closely.
Yeah, I guess a lot of it depends on winds and also the temperature of the water.
Well, those are factors. The water's certainly warm, not as warm as it was down in the Caribbean, but certainly warm. Matthew will be fighting a little bit of a wind shear, so we expect the storm to slowly come down in about days 4 or 5, but it will be a major hurricane for at least the next 3 days, certainly while it's still off the Florida coastline. A lot will depend upon the environment that it's in, but make no mistake about it, we'll still be dealing with a serious hurricane for the remainder of the week and into the weekend.
That's Dennis Felkin, spokesperson for the National Hurricane Center in Miami. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me now to tell us about a new honor for a music star who's also got a new song out.
Usher Raymond, yes indeed, the guy who just got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Congratulations to him.
I'll pass it along. He's also got his new album out. It's his 8th album. It was originally going to be called Flawed, which is kind of not a good name for a new album, Flawed. You don't want to start out of the box with that name. So he did change it to Hard to Love and put that out. The critics have not been very kind. The LA Times wrote it's filled with tunes, but very little substance. And his last album didn't do very well either. So I don't know. You know, he's kind of slowing down. He's going to turn 38 in a week and hasn't been on the road for a while, but he does performances. He was at the Global Citizens Music Festival in New York Central Park recently. He was on stage doing a show in Atlanta. He fell off the stage, by the way, not because he's 37, but because he kind of lost his focus, he said. And he was in a film that also did not do very well, Hands of Stone, which was opposite Robert De Niro. He was playing Sugar Ray Leonard in a boxing movie. Didn't do very well. But nonetheless, Usher keeps on being Usher, and the fans are always excited whenever he's got new music.
So what is this new music?
Well, his newest single is a song called Rivals. So I brought that in for you so that you could hear it in the worldwide premiere on your little segment.
So tell me how you feel. Kisses I dare sell that keep me energized. Tired of going back and forth, baby, I'm hypnotized. You got a girl in love on the low, though.
Well, I mean, this must be good for Usher that he did get this star in the Hollywood Boulevard, because it sounds like he's kind of had a sort of frustrating time recently.
Well, it hasn't been great lately, and of course, his son is battling diabetes, and a couple of years ago, his son, unfortunately, was in a swimming pool accident and had to be resuscitated, and fortunately, he was resuscitated. Usher's been married several times, got married quietly this past year, again, for the second time to a stylist, And so hopefully he's happy and he puts everything on the right track. But he seems like a great guy, and he's won so many awards over the years and has sold so many millions of records. People love to watch him dance. They love his moves. He has a new film that he's in production with currently that's going to be coming out in 2017. It's called Last of the Showmen. So we're looking forward to seeing a new movie, and hopefully he does better than Hands of Stone.
Yeah, hopefully it will. All right, thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Without you, I feel uneven. Make every day our love season. Baby girl, you know you're my rider. That should be enough reason. Call you baby, that's only your title. Cause I don't need no more rival.
You gotta give me that.
I put that on the Bible.
You gotta give me that.
You're the only thing that I want.
You gotta give me that.
Give me that.
And that is the song Rivals by Usher. Well, in other news, the outlines of a major battle over online privacy is starting to take shape. Open Whisper Systems, which produces an end-to-end encryption software for messaging service for a messaging service app called Signal, was subpoenaed by the U.S. government earlier this year to provide information on two phone numbers associated with a grand jury investigation in Virginia. According to the New York Times, a part of the subpoena was to order OWS not to reveal the information request for a year. Many tech companies contend gag orders like this are being overused by the government and are in violation of the Bill of Rights. The government counters by saying a revelation of a request could impede an investigation. Part of the gag order was lifted when the American Civil Liberties Union challenged the government and made some of the information in the subpoena public. The documents reveal the government wanted email addresses, history logs, browser cookie data, and other information associated with the two phone numbers. OWS countered that it could not hand over that information because it doesn't have it. The nonprofit Open Whisper Systems is the brainchild of a man who goes by the pseudonym Moxie Marlinspike, who describes himself as a software engineer, hacker, sailor, captain, and shipwright. And the technology behind Signal is widely used among the world's most popular messaging apps like WhatsApp, Facebook's Secret Conversations, and Google's Allo. Signal also has been championed by National Security Agency leaker Edward Snowden. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com, and you can also later this evening listen to that debate between the vice presidential candidates. So give it a listen. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Nepal, Elena Teplitz, recently met with and bade farewell to Sri Maya Tatal, the 90,000th Bhutanese refugee to be resettled in the United States. Ms. Tatal and her four children left Nepal on September 21st to start their new lives in the northeastern state of New Hampshire. Ambassador Teplitz visited the Beldangi Bhutanese refugee camp in Japa last week, where she discussed the third country resettlement program, which is close to completion. In a ceremony at the U.S. Embassy, Ms. Tatal shared her hopes for new opportunities for herself and her children in the United States after spending over 20 years in a refugee camp. Paul Norton, Chief of Mission for the International Organization for Migration, the IOM, and Kevin Allen, Country Representative for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, joined Ambassador Teplitz in bidding farewell to Ms. Tatal. The total number of Bhutanese refugees who have been resettled to third countries has reached 105,000, with 90,000 in the United States. The United States, in coordination with the government of Nepal, UNHCR, IOM, and the governments of Australia, Canada, Denmark, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, and the United Kingdom, began resettling Bhutanese refugees from eastern Nepal in 2007. The Nepali people and government have been very gracious hosts to refugees for decades, and the third country resettlement of Bhutanese refugees is one of the most successful refugee management stories in recent memory, said Ambassador Teplitz. However, the massive resettlement program is coming to an end. While the international community continues to ask the government of Bhutan to repatriate those refugees who would like to return, finding a durable solution here in Nepal for those who will remain is critical.